Gordon Liddy is my muse. Mother Treason. 4. Diamonds are next, along with plunder aplenty. By 1981, I had passed through the politics of war, poverty, marriage, and divorce to arrive at my first sci-fi spy sales. What this means, if you're curious, is that I got drafted, clerked for the National Security Agency, got loose, clerked on New York Grub Street, got married, found a clerk to end it, got smart, and started to make it all up, clerking for tip. I had just enough surplus to exercise my return ticket to Russia again. I needed the trip to clear my head of some strange family affair trouble in Persia, which I won't include here, perhaps another day. Also, there was a loony Texas bankerette to avoid and a screenplay to recover from. My grand solution was February Finnair, junket for 22 days in the Soviet Union, Helsinki overland to Moscow, and plane to Armenia, Georgia, the Black Sea, and the Ukraine, back to Leningrad, and out. In 12 years, I had upped my average and written trivia twice. Once from Scotland, where the NSA's wisdom posted me at our subbase, and once again from New York, where I hit bottom reviewing my kind of trash for an arts rag. Trivia had not replied, but Tina had, enclosing pictures of their baby the first time, then their three babies the second time. Her notes were warm and slightly vague. We are well, hope you are. I am a researcher at the Institute. Trivia's still in the army. Then, I am a doctoral candidate at the Institute. Trivia's in the civil service. I thought none of this odd. I thought, they're happy. I'm not. Get to them and admire. Admiration is a calming thought, and it put me in contrast to the fretful Canadian ancients on my Finnair tour. We were badly undersubscribed because the Californian contingent had canceled en masse. The Cold War had heaved an ice ball into everybody's face when the Soviets brilliantly decided to play ice hockey with Afghan heads. Invasion, December 1979. And President-elect Reagan brilliantly speechified with the idea that the Russians were very bad guys. Inauguration Day, January 1981. The early Cold War theme of nothing goes was in reruns. This made neutrals like Canadians very queasy. I liked them plenty when we boarded the train in Helsinki and they sent a legation of white-haired farm ladies to ask me, "We understand you know about Russia." I did, and kept the wonderfully witty gang who crowded into my compartment entertained as the Moscow Express rolled into grim Russian winter. There was routine folly at the border when the cranky border guard searched us for nuclear weapons. One sheep farmer refused to get up from his bunk so the guard could look under the bed. The sheep farmer protested, "I'll move, mister, when you ask me politely." The border guard shouted, "You'll move when I tell you." I was called in to arbitrate. I thereby called the goons down on my compartment for a truly vain moment. Border guards are lowlife who are also members of state security, the aforementioned 3 million stooges. They don't like foreigners, and they hate those who can speak Russian proverbially. Two of them failed to find a secret compartment in my canvas bag. An officer arrived to pounce upon the several copies I'd brought along of my first novel, Eat the Songbirds. He couldn't read English. He might not have known Churchill's post-war jest to Stalin about the future of Eastern Europe. The eagle should let the songbirds sing. But he knew that the bald eagle on the dust jacket should not be grasping that steppe eagle so rudely, the one colored red and branded with a hammer and sickle. I gave him a copy, said he would enjoy it. The bad guys were war, pestilence, famine, and death. He almost took them all. He almost confiscated my life's work. But no, he said, "Novelists are crazy. You're not a poet, are you?" Offended, I bent a proverb for him. "The bells toll often in Moscow, but not for dinner or poets." He smirked and approved me as harmless to Mother Russia. Moscow was tidy-drab this time. The Olympics the previous summer had rearranged reality. It's called Potemkin Villaging for the famous fake village a Tsarist minister once built to woo foreigners. Soviet bigness had taken on Moscow, cleaning up depots, hotels, roadways, and as many drunks and gamblers as could be spared. Of course, it was now 6 months later, and the facades were crumbling. We waded through the falling plaster to arrive at the hilariously gargantuan and elite Hotel Rossia off Red Square. 2,000 rooms that mysteriously connect to just 4 elevator banks. I helped our in-tourist guide shepherd the elders to bed rest. Then I raced off to buy an expensive fox fur cap for myself and a bottle of pepper vodka for my visit to Trifia and Tina. My tour had only had 3 full days in Moscow. I aimed to be quick before the Canadians found me out a deserter. I called the telephone number Tina had sent me. Failed. I tried the Paligans' apartment. Failed. Shucking manners, I taxied to Trifia and Tina's address in a newly built housing district east of the city. No one home. The neighbor in the hall mistook me for a prosperous Muscovite and said that the Paligans might be at their dacha. I asked again and learned a second address, well south of the city. This was news. To have a dacha is privilege, though it's usually just what we call a cottage in a former peasant village. I couldn't phone them, since there isn't directory assistance in Moscow. You know, or you don't need to. I rang the 2 numbers I did have off the hook that night, failed, as I did for 2 more days. Meanwhile, I busied myself happily with the Canadians. They loved everything strange, and Russia is where there is no Western familiar. The Canadians enjoyed the Kremlin churches, museums, opera, the cultural whirlwind. And I enjoyed their superb questions to our guide about primary schools, produce, livestock. If you want to enjoy Russia, go with farmers. And then, it was the last night, and I was frustrated. I should have written ahead, but then, why should they be absent midwinter, a bureaucrat and a doctoral candidate? That was good employment, but not time on your hands. And where were the Paligans? I could have tried the National Hotel. Truth, I didn't want to upset Mom again. Not before I found Trifia. Tip hatched a bold plan. Hire a taxi and go south. I'd be back in time for our Aeroflot flight to Armenia. Dead winter. Flaking snow. Black and ferociously cold. Tip hip-hopped for adventure. My taxi driver, Felix Andreevich, liked my Russian rubles scheme. Mostly, he'd like the dollars I promised for his success. Crazy American cowboys. A blizzard coming. I can drive. Make the getaway. His cowboy reference was to the 3 10-gallon hats I brought as presents for Trifia's children, and the cowboy boots for him. For Tina, I had a Bloomingdale's survival kit. Felix tanked up at his black market dealership, and we slalomed down the Tula Road. Felix kept himself happy with my vodka, while he kept me alert with his driving and questions. Do Americans like music in the taxi? I can get that. Jazz or the rock? They raised my fees, the blackguards. This was going to be a good year. I mentioned that Washington was grumbling about making it a very bad year for everyone. No. Afghanistan? Felix puzzled. Who cares about that? Wasn't it enough? I lost so much business last summer. You remember, Yankee Doodle didn't ride his pony to the Moscow Olympics. It was past 10 when Felix found the village turnoff. We stopped short of a neat forest settlement of dachas. Felix supposed, high party. Your friends high party, are they? He actually used the Russian word for extreme privilege in the Soviet Union, nomenklatura, which translates high party, and is equivalent to our CEO class. I said they were not high party, and invited Felix along for warmth and eats. Felix pounded down a caretaker's door to get good exact news. Da, the Paligans are home. Who wants to know? I played the prosperous Muscovite again, and we hiked across a sublimely moonlit snow field. It was not going to blizzard. That had been part of Felix's bartering technique. Tina answered the door and jumped into my arms. Her scent was pine wood and brandy. Tipya! Out of the sky! Tipya! How I needed you here! We were welcomed into a sumptuous home. Finished trappings, Russian embellishment, including icons, antique weapons, fur rugs like a zoo. Tina herself was wrapped in a fox-trim robe over a French dressing gown. Felix reacted to the wealth by lowering his head and shuffling like a serf. There were 2 babushkas who surrounded us with orders to get comfortable and then brought out supper in fast stages. Felix vanished into the kitchen with the babushkas. Meanwhile, Tina was boozily garrulous. If I had known, when did you arrive? Leaving tomorrow? Trifia will be désolé. He's away till March. I like the winters here best. I should wake the children. What wonderful hats. And boots. Oh, Trifia will love them. He doesn't have anything so grand. Bloomingdale's. This is sufficient for you to understand this was not simple, beautiful Tina the scholar, but rather a woman of worldly means. Her wedding band adjoined a large blue cast diamond trimmed with sapphires. The French désolé was arch Russian pretension of the Tsarist school. She knew Bloomingdale so well, she had already some of its paraphernalia. The hardest evidence that she had been transformed was the Greenland falcon over the fireplace, a magnificent rare bird stuffed in the home of a bird lover. I speculate now that perhaps this sacrilege was her sense of shame. I held back then. It's not obvious how to say, I don't believe you. But when she brought out the family pictures in splendid painted frames so I could see the children, it all got so obvious that I did, too. There was Trifia through the years, first in uniforms that grew gold leaf and medals, then out of uniform and in elegantly cut Italian suits, ever more handsome and photogenic. The three details that upset me most were, first, the famous blue tab on his dress uniform, tunic, coat. Second, that the Italian suits were black on black over black. Third, that the backdrop was not just Moscow or Forest Steppe. I recognized Scandinavia, Vienna, mosques, Rome, and Havana sunshine. Tina was very, very smart. She knew what she was doing. If I saw, I saw. I stared at the pictures, and one hurt more than the rest. Trifia in black in the rain outside a casino that could have been Monte Carlo, holding up a poker hand to the camera. Four aces and a jack, the wire pallid in hand. I saw everything. There was Pelican the gambler and face for hire in the service of the baddest guys in his country, state security. The infamous blue tabs, the execrable organs, the KGB, the 3 million stooges. Trifia was a secret policeman. In sci-fi spy talk, he was black ops. What did I say? Something evasive, such as how beautiful the babies were, how beautiful Tina had been pregnant. Tina grinned. She had already read the flap on the cloth copy of my book I gave her. She'd also read the back cover of the paperback where my NSA clerkship was brandished like a sword. Tina asked, "Is it so different for you, Tipia? Another peace delegation?" I spoke flatly that it was different for me. She returned proverbially, "When you lie down with wolves, do you get up?" I said, "You could get up, flea bites and all." Tina went past politics to philosophy. She patted my book jacket and her pictures. Her diamond flashed. Then she said, "In the motherland, the fleas are very big, like carrion birds, and some look like mama." If this were one of my sci-fi spy yarns, I could preach prejudice to you. How state security is a caste in a country that profoundly believes in castes, being former serfdom with the lords turned out. How state security recruits from its families, and that when you are born to the breed, it requires self-destructive descent, like turning from preppy banking to get out. How state security divides into directorates, the first being the most famous for its cloak and assassins, C.F. Le Carre, Buckley, et al. The second being the snitchiest for its spying on foreigners in Russia. The fifth being the foulest for its spying on Soviet dissent. The eighth being their NSA, and the ninth being their bodyguard goons. In sum, how state security is cruel, clumsy, stupid, obvious, remorseless like street gangs, greedy like Wall Street, vain like Hollywood. I could also tell you all this with specifics, how a handsome boy named Trifia went from ice hockey to high-stakes traveling during the Brezhnev era, when nothing goes, maybe, prevailed, when the Stalinists stopped mass murder and perfected mass corruption. But I'm not selling that tale. I lack the details. What I did have that night with Tina was the one necessary detail to Trifia's fall into betraying his own country. It sounds as trite as it is. Mama was KGB. Likely, second chief directorate, the snitches of the KRO. A nighttime concierge at the elite national hotel where foreigners were bunked. Mama was a stooge, and she had made her only son one, too. Ambitious motherhood, achieving childhood. Trifia's matinee idol looks, passionate talent for gambling, and make-believe cowpoking had done the rest. I still don't know how it worked. He was probably first chief directorate, the Glamour Boys, but he might have been a loner to any of the other gangs. He traveled widely, and that suggests the operations department, equivalent to our clandestine services. You call them spies. They call themselves agents or fieldmen or case officers or ops. What did he do? That's simple. What he was told. I'm guessing intelligence gathering, maybe some bagmanship. The gambling is my only insight. I'm guessing that what state security did with Trifia was put him in their idea of a gambling department, because he had the luck to pluck three of a kind and the sense not to try to fill an inside straight. Poker's profoundly not a Russian game. It's as foreign as Longhorn steers, so it's probable he played all casino games, but poker was his favorite. It's the one game of chance for which there are no house odds. And what use to the stooges? Besides raising a little cash, Trifia could locate the heavy losers. How easy to turn a gambler into an asset if you know he has debts he can't pay or swag he didn't earn. I can't guess more. Why should the 3 million stooges even want a gambling department? Does our CIA have one? I don't know. There's this. When in doubt, Russians imitate the West. Could it be as silly as this, that the stooges believe sci-fi spy guys like Ian Fleming? That they wanted a bevy of bonds out there? Perhaps. But what they got from me was my Trifia, a Pushkin cowboy in black, who was also a wealthy man in a country that suffers famine every winter. I did not solve all this that night. What I've told you is guesswork that I worked up later. I passed another hour with Tina, avoiding secrets and eyes. She faked bliss. I faked admiration. Blame it on the Cold War tip. I beckoned Felix from the kitchen, said that I had a plane to catch and a blizzard to avoid. Thanks, Felix. And we parted in true Russian tears. Tina wept. When are you coming back? I didn't know. You must write Trifia everything. Yes. You must marry again and raise a family, too, now that you're rich and famous, maybe. Be happy, Tipia. Life is good. I didn't say anything wise.